That was Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal. The lightest training camp he's ever covered. He's been around a long time.
Wow.
I know he's covered the Patriots for a long time, covered the Packers for a long time. Guy's been around. But Ted Johnson here on WEEI Afternoons, you've been around. Is this what you've seen, what you've heard? Is this a noticeably light or soft camp that Mike Vrabel, your buddy, has been holding down there in Foxborough?
I don't want to say it's soft, but it's lighter. It's lighter. It definitely is. They're not hitting as much. I mean, three out of the 11 first 11 practices were walkthroughs.
Tweet it out. Ted Johnson says Patriots team soft.
I did not say soft. I said lighter for sure.
Vrabel pushover, it says Johnson.
Vrabel lost his fastball.
A soft camp would be, holding their feet to the fire when it comes to knowing their plays. But everything you're told is that they get quizzed on it, that there's pressure in the meetings, that they got to be engaged mentally. You know what? What is my number one concern with this team for this season? Do you know what my – you always say it. My biggest concern is depth.
And I
worry about the depth of this football team. Your top two corners are down. Your starting right tackle, is in and out. What I think Mike is trying to do is have a tough, kind of accountable, set the tone, culture setting type of training camp without beating their brains in to prove the point. I think he's trying to have a tough camp without it being this physically draining, demanding thing where, all of a sudden you got all backups, going into the week one because you ran a really hard training camp. So you got to be careful. There's a fine line. I think he's establishing a culture, a tough culture, not a soft one, even though they're not hitting as much. I think he's doing it and setting the tone in a different way, and I think the guys were responding.
I also would just answer with, and I say have to remind myself, it's 2025. Like, we have in our mind, like, first day of pads, goal line, we've got a fullback in there, and he's ISOing Ted Johnson. Yeah, 25 years ago, that was a thing. Mm-hmm. That's not football
anymore. They
don't
make them like that anymore.
No, they don't. They don't. And
everyone's in Guardian helmets.
I mean, hell, the fullback on this team, he blocked for one day and went on IR. Yep. Like, this, it's a different era. Yep. And I think Greg and I and people that have been around a long time just need to get to grips with. Matt Collins actually said himself, talking about Vrabel, and it's like sometimes I think he wants to do certain things, and then he remembers it's 2025 and the CBA only allows certain things. And so I actually think this camp has been less soft or tougher than Gerard Mayo's a year ago. Gerard Mayo's camps last year, the first hour of practice was guys running around like they were, I don't even know what they were doing, calisthenics.
Well, most of them were watching, like, Judon yell at
circles.
Mayo.
It was the weirdest camp I've ever seen. This year, forget the thumping. Forget, like, Jabril Peppers taking somebody's head off. That's gone. That's a days gone past. But, like, there's a lot of football work going on. Without hitting.
We were all there yesterday. It wasn't it? I mean, it was an efficiently ran practice, so they got a lot done.
All those plays when our heads were spinning, like, boom, boom.
They did more, Ted, than Washington did, by the way.
Do you know what that's the old Bill Walsh West Coast philosophy? Like, when Pete Carroll came here, I just remember him saying, guys, we're not going to hit as much as you did with Belichick, but we're going to run a lot of plays.
Right.
And it was fast, and you ran to the drills, and you got into the drills. I like that. And I think that's even though that might not be perceived as tough, it is efficient, and it's, to me, it's just as important to practice with that tempo as opposed to football used to be who's tougher. It's a war of wills. It's fighting in a phone booth. And Parcells used to almost think, I think he would look at training camp as, I'm going to find out who's the toughest guys are, and then those are going to be the guys I signed. It's not about who's tougher anymore.
Right.
You don't have training camp to find that out. Football's different in that way. And so, it lends to see that you would have a different style of practice than you did 20 years ago.
So my buddy Mike Giardi, our buddy here on WEEI Afternoons, he's one of those guys that charts every play with a number. Boom, boom, the result, the players, the format, everything. And the very first team segment yesterday to start practice that was right in front of us, it was the Washington offense versus the Patriots. He looks over, when it finishes, he looks over, and they had gone back and forth through the three quarterbacks. He goes, it was 34 plays right there. They ran 34 plays, and there were four stations on the field. So you multiply that times four, 136 football plays were run in like a 20-minute span.
If you're a person that just choreographs practices, I thought that was one of the more choreographed practices. And it was two teams that never practiced together coming together. And it was just that was the kind of practice, if I was a coach, I would want to see. A fast, efficient, you know, get in, get out type of practice.
And there was some pop, though. Like, it wasn't pop free.
Yeah,
like,
it's still football. You have joint practices, you're going to have some hitting. And I think Greg was making these comments before joint practices and just in general. And I'll be honest, I fell victim to it because I still do. The first day of pads were going on, we were driving down there, and I was thinking to myself, oh, Jabril Peppers is going to pop somebody today. And then you get out there and you remember what modern full padded practices are. And the guy comes up because he had a chance. I forgot who it was. Booty Diggs. Somebody caught one, and he did the run by where he kind of gave that body language like, in a game, I'm hitting him. But he did the little run by him in front of him so everybody could see. He even ran a little further to draw attention to himself. And that's what practice is now. But to me, that doesn't mean it's soft. I see a team that looks like they're working their asses off, a team that is every drill, unlike Mayo, and I don't want to keep crapping on Mayo, but the reality is that's what we watched most recently on the practice fields of Foxborough a year ago. Every drill is efficient, bouncing from one to the next, and I think that's just modern football. Like, you don't have to do 1,000 sprints at the end of practice if you practiced hard for an hour and a half, right? Or 2 hours, or however long they're out.
I agree. And
right?
Mayo's practices were, they were out there for 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Because if you do calisthenics for an hour and a half, then you only really practice
Mike,
football.
Mike doesn't run long practices, but he gets the most out of those shorter practices.
90 minutes seems pretty good. And he also expects, and maybe this goes into what kind of spring and summertime they had, Ted. Remember, it's all about accountability and entitlement is going to be shown the way out the door in the room. Maybe, just maybe, he set everybody to task, show up in shape, know your playbook, and get ready to run an efficient camp. And maybe, just maybe, these guys did.
It looks like it. I mean, you know what? The thing I always look for is just, do I see buy-in? Do I see guys buying in? And you know, what does that look like? You just have to be around the sport long enough to kind of know what to look for. And so far, just I listen to guys, how they talk. Buy-in is right now, that's not a question. And that's, to me, is the biggest, you know, kind of challenge for a coach is, can I get these guys to buy in when I'm selling? They have bought into what Mike's selling. Now, what's he selling? Is it going to be good enough to get them to where they want? We will see. And do they have the horses to get there? But the buy-in to me is this team is as bought in with their head coach at this time of the season as any Patriots team I've seen since I moved back here 6 years ago has been at this time.
And that buy-in is where I wanted to go next, because the other thing that I think goes hand in hand with work and buy-in is guys flashing. And we talked about it yesterday. You know, the defensive line in front of us, there was a guy, and I'm actually drawing a blank on his name right now. He flashed. And, you know, you get a guy, DJ James has actually at cornerback had a couple practices where you're like, well, who number? What number? Is that DJ James again? Or double A. Alex Austin.
He's looked good.
And when you compare that to what Curran just talked about, a guy like Duggar at safety, Is there something going on down there in terms of the buy-in where veteran players or even players in general? Elijah Ponder was flashing on the defensive line. Guys like that flash. Do they get more opportunities?
Yeah.
Do they then get a roster spot? Does that impact the buy-in in the culture where you say, I'm a player. I've been out here.
Yep.
And just like the media, I saw Elijah Ponder flashing.
Yep.
I don't know who Elijah Ponder is, but does he deserve more reps? Does he get more reps?
You know what? If you're a coach that wants guys to follow you, because usually the best coaches are selling the best players win.
If you don't do it, they'll
always say, if you don't do it in practice, you won't do it in the game.
Right.
So, for example, if Jalen Polk makes the 53-man roster, guys will look at
we riot
and be like,
they'll roll their eyes.
No, they won't. They won't say anything. No one will say anything. They'll just say, like, okay. I mean, is this guy really about winning? Is it about really the best player? So what he talks about, he says one thing but does something different, and that's where your actions got to be consistent with your words. And if you're saying the best guys, the guys that are, you know, showing and flashing and showing up every day, if those guys are the ones that are still on the team when they go to cut down, then the buy-in is going to be there.
And he obviously has a history of that. He brought some of those guys here in a Spillane and a Gibbons and some of those guys who
and
other
half the coaching staff
worked their way. But no, I'm talking about guys that weren't drafted, weren't high picks.
Because
you're right. I could see the conversation Polk. Polk makes the team, and Ted Johnson and some teammate are sitting next to each other.
Like, what?
Polk made the team? Really? And so, one of you would say, two words, second round. Right? Yeah. And that's all you have to say.
Yeah.
And that's why he makes it over an Efton Chisholm or whoever else you think might
have done
more.
But then right there, you said this isn't the best roster that you could say. I want my coach to make the best personnel decisions. Not just be a hard, great coach, but they also got to make the tough personnel decisions. If a lower draft pick is better than the guy that he's playing behind, he should get the opportunity to play. That's, to me.
Do you have faith in your guy to do that?
I do.
Do you have faith in the organization to do that? Because there's a second voice.
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
Because Elliot Wolf.
I do not.
Drafted Jalen Polk in the second round.
But let's look at how many Elliot Wolf draft picks or signees are still on this team?
They're fading.
Couple. I mean,
fading fast.
And some of them are guys that people want to bring up as surprise cuts. Kyle Duggar, Mike Onwenu, right? Guys that they spent money, Ramondre Stevenson.
Cole Strange.
Guys,
going.
Yeah. I mean, those are the guys that are on the bubble.
They're almost all gone, man. So, Elliot, his power is, does anybody feel Elliot Wolf's presence at any of these camps?
No. And I feel like Elliot Wolf must watch these practices and see Vrabel diving on piles and then Vrabel meeting with fans and being like, wow, he owns this town. Like, he does everything right. It's one thing if you're Belichick and you're just the old school hardo, but Vrabel is kissing babies and signing autographs, is diving on a pile to fight with a player, but is also doing sort of the Belichick stoic stuff in the background.
So Vrabel is the guy that owns this big business, but is sweeping the floors, cleaning the toilets. He's doing everything. And do you know what the other employees see? They go, man, if the boss is going to do that, then I can do that.
Following
and that's kind of what he's doing.
Yeah. And that's the word he's fixated on, culture. Like, he can do it in other ways and create it with a Robert Spillane because he thinks he's a culture guy. But that might be the biggest culture right there. But you can undercut it. As you're pointing out, with a Polk or something, all that work you put in doing these various things, one message can be sent with one move.
Andy, when final cutdown day comes, it's one big message to the team. Everyone that was cut sends a message. Everyone that retained is a message. That's who you keep, who you cut, is sending messages to everybody.
So you guys kept tabs on that? Like, know who should make the roster, who shouldn't, who earned a roster spot, slid in
the back
door.
Yep.
Ooh, that's amazing.
Now, we wouldn't necessarily go around talking about it.
No, but you thought it, and maybe a couple of you in quiet places off to the side did?
Yep. Absolutely.
That's funny. That's interesting. Because we all do it. We're in the media. But and I guess it makes a lot of sense because you guys are there as much as anybody.
You don't think on draft day, everybody that's on the Patriots is going, who do the Patriots draft? I want to see who they got.
How about a couple years ago, there was that famous video of Kendrick Bourne when they drafted Cole Strange at a Patriots player draft party, reacting to it live on Facebook and walking out of the party. And it got shared, and then all of a sudden he had to pull it down.
Yep.
But there were too many aggregators and fan blogs that had grabbed it as well. Of course they're into it.
But I just think more in training camp, I've been beaten down over the years by the answer of, like, I just worry about myself. I got enough to worry about with myself. Head down.
Bubble guys. I mean, you know, the guys that were, you know, that pretty much we know who are shoo-ins to make the team, the leaders, the core guys, those guys are the ones that are thinking the way.
But Robert Spillane, for example, who I think we all think is like the middle linebacker, the leader of that
group. Even though
group.
I have yet to hear him make one play, I don't want to hold that against him.
Okay, well, let's dig into that a little bit.
But
you're concerned about the linebackers?
No,
the $33 million linebacker?
No.
I think, isn't he a wake up and get 150 tackles guy?
That's what he's been. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope they didn't buy him. You're not thinking they bought him on the downside.
I'm more concerned about our D-line. Let's just get to the quarterback. And Spillane and the second line of defense, they're going to be fine. They're not. That's, to me, that's the weakness of the defense, though, is the off-the-ball linebacker.
I will tell you, I thought both – I didn't know a ton about Spillane and Gibbons, and I've been kind of told, like, they're running linebackers. They like to run around a little bit. Yeah. And both of them, which I take with a grain of salt, I think have struggled at times in coverage in camp, which I still think is the hardest thing linebackers do, is 7-on-7 and different one-on-one, certainly. I kind of forget any one-on-ones.
Yeah.
I don't care if Ted Johnson could get beat 1,000 times in a row by LaDainian Tomlinson or Curtis Martin, and I'll just roll my eyes and not care.
And I did.
you're human. It's okay.
I just think that's irrelevant. But they have been relatively quiet, but I think Fitzy's right. There is some degree of a guy like Spillane. Remember, when you spoke with him, he out-hardoed you. Remember, he was
he out-hardoed the hardest hardo.
Yes, absolutely. So I feel like a guy like that needs full contact,
no doubt.
Reps.
Yeah, no doubt.
We will see a very different Robert Spillane week one against his former team, no less.
I'm not worried.
You can't just tell him, oh, this is the two live reps you get today. And he needs to get in the feel of the game as a thumper.
Ted, you predicted on this show, not to get into our wildest prediction for the upcoming season. Yours was, I guarantee Travion Henderson will catch at least a touchdown on the wheel route. Andy, you said you predicted a combined, your over-under was 20.5 on touchdowns overall, aggregate from Ramondre, Gibson, possibly even Lan Larrison. Because
I'm not including him in my calculus.
You just said the running backs, okay. And especially Travion Henderson.
Running and catching.
Yes, total touchdowns.
Running and catching, 20.5. Bold. I like it. Would love to see it happen. Mine is, I bet you Robert Spillane sees at least one pass attempt for a touchdown in the end zone.
Throws a pass?
No, sees a pass attempt. Like, as in he gets a pass thrown to him. Mike Vrabel style. I think Vrabel loves this guy. I bet you least one time he lines up on offense, Vrabel style, and gets a pass thrown
to him.
That
is definitely a...
He has been working the jugs. I know it's his job because he's a middle linebacker and he bats down passes and whatnot. He is on the jugs machine an awful lot.
And he caught the one that he had his opportunity to in the Friday night deflected ball, but whatever. Tip ball drill.
Before the end of this season, I'm putting a stake on that. Vrabel's going to give him at least one shot.
Well, I do know that I think it was Gibbons was talking about in Tennessee, Vrabel used to brag about his touchdowns all the time to the linebackers receivers. He would go in the receiver room and say, I had more touchdowns than you whole group of guys have ever
done. He could have said that to the entire receiver room last year.
We had a routine every Friday. And you know we had that linebacking core 03-04 was stacked and it was a lot of fun.
Elite.
Friday after practice, Pepper Johnson would throw passes at us, and you stayed in, so you got a pass thrown to you, and if you dropped it, then you were out, and who was left? Vrabel probably won of the 16 weeks. He probably won 14 of them. The guy's got the strongest hands I've ever seen. He can catch the ball and doesn't double clutch it. And, you know, and so my feeling is he's probably passed that down to Spillane a little bit.
I don't want to be disrespectful, but on a regular, what was your usual slotting?
Oh, you know, I wasn't the worst, but I wasn't the best. You know, I was right in the middle.
You could have just asked without the preface of, I don't want to be disrespectful.
I didn't have rock hands, but they weren't as strong as
Vrabel. How about Pfeiffer?
Could he catch Pfeiffer had nice hands too, yeah.
I feel like Fife is nice at anything he wants to do.
The way he dresses, I used to look in his locker room like, who's his tailor, man? I got to get his tailor. So I did. I got his tailor.
All right, up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Way too much money on my suits.
We won't learn about Ted Johnson's tailor, but it's a very exciting segment. I'm more excited about this segment than I've been for a long, long time. Ted Johnson is going to give us his list, top five most overrated and underrated players from his playing career. I have not seen it. I want to react organically. But he did tell me he thinks there's one or two guys on there that I'm going to at least raise an eyebrow about. So it's Ted Johnson's most overrated and underrated players from his career. That's up next on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending. Earlier this week on WEEI Afternoons, we talked about a list put out by a Twitter aggregator that had the top 10 most overrated players in NFL history. We talked about it. Eli Manning seemed to be a favorable choice in the eyes of most. I bristled at Bo Jackson being included. There were various names on there, but that sparked us.
Yeah, that Bo is just that was just because he had such a short career. He was a freak of nature.
Bo is like numbers. I never rushed for 1,000 yards. He never did this.
The home run he hit at the All-Star break landed yet.
There's guys that you play with that are freaks. And then there's super freaks. And then there's Bo Jackson.
Right.
That's how good he was.
He's a guy you wouldn't have to size up because he's pre-sized.
I mean, like, I'm sorry. I got you. I know exactly what you're bringing to the table, man. He just had that style that was uniquely his own.
So that got us thinking. Ted Johnson played a decade in the NFL, so he saw a lot of guys.
And a fun decade. 95 to 05 was like a good, fun decade with some really, I don't know, football was fun then because it was a little bit more of a running game. But, anyway.
Ted, you were like at the forefront of trying to stop all of the burgeoning fantasy stars that kind of, in a lot of ways, helped blow football up. And like the Priest Holmeses of the world.
Oh, they're great running backs. Great
LaDainian Tomlinson.
But also the transition of, like, you know, Christian Okoye, Mike Allstott, the big bruisers, into the Tomlinson, Falk-like
Edgerrin James,
freaky, they could be receiver kind of guys.
No
so
doubt.
That had us thinking Ted Johnson should come up with his own list of overrated and underrated, so he's going to give us top five overrated, top five underrated from his career. And again, reminder, we decided not to include Patriots. We didn't need him.
There might be one or two.
Oh, okay.
When it comes to the underrated.
Oh, of course, the underrated.
Yep.
You don't want to give any. You want so yes, we have a TED Talk today, ladies and gentlemen.
It's time for a TED Talk.
There's a football player that Ted Johnson
smacked down. He hit a pothole that time in the form of Ted Johnson.
Stories from on and off the field from three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson.
Ted Johnson scrapes right into Jerome Bettis' face and puts him on his back.
This guy is going to be one of the best inside linebackers in football.
On WEEI Afternoons.
All right. No further ado, right. Ted Johnson. Which side are we starting on?
We're gonna go under. We're gonna start at underrated.
Okay.
All right.
Underrated, and so is this. This is a top five list, and are we starting with the number five most underrated player of Ted Johnson's career?
All right. I'm gonna start I don't need to rank these. They're all just. Probably not. Top five underrated players.
They're all in the top
five. Not a five to one. Just
I got in trouble because I said when I used to work down in Houston, I said this was the best football player I've ever seen. Well, Ted, you play with Tom Brady. I'm like, this is the best football player I've ever seen.
You heard what I said.
You guys, can you take any guess who is number five on my most underrated list?
The best football player you've ever seen.
In during your playing days.
I was in Houston.
Mm-hmm. Steve McNair.
I covered the Texans.
Oh.
J.J. Watt. To me, is underrated. He's in his first 5 years. He had a Hall of Fame career in his first 5 years.
Yep.
People say, well, you know, Lawrence Taylor is the best defensive player ever. Well, you know, J.J. Watt had three defensive MVPs just like Taylor did. So, to me, J.J. Watt is one of the more underrated players that I've ever seen.
I think he's sadly dogged by the fact that he never made it to a Super Bowl or won a title. He's in Club Marino, which is unfortunate.
A defensive tackle isn't going to be the reason your team makes the Super Bowl. Right. Number four on my list, I'm going to go with a former teammate of mine, a tight end who I don't think gets enough love, is Ben Coates.
Yes.
One of the more underrated players of my time is Ben Coates. The guy was... he had everything that Tony Gonzalez had, the size, the hands, the speed. He had ability. I love the way he practiced. Ben Coates is number four on my list for most underrated.
If I always joke with you, you were born maybe at not the perfect time. If Ben Coates was born a little bit later and played with the dynasty Tom Brady Patriots.
Oh, 87 would have still been great.
I never understood. In my era, tight ends weren't valued. And I'm like,
right.
What do you mean? They're like... They block, they catch. How do you mean they're not valued? They were vital.
Didn't he carry your offense for multiple seasons?
If Drew didn't know where to go in the red zone, he always went.
Drew got him killed too. Drew would be like, "Wait, there's four guys around Ben. I'll still throw
blanket,
it.
You know I'm throwing it to
Coach. You know what though? He still would show up.
Oh, absolutely.
I've never seen a guy. He practiced hard. He always showed up. Number three on my five most underrated players of my era, I'm going with a center. For the Denver Broncos, who played his college ball at BC. Anybody know what his name is?
Tom Nalen.
Big, not big, small little Tom Nalen now.
He's, my kind of guy.
He's lost a lot of weight, but Tom Nalen, one of the best centers I've ever played against. Scrappy, tough, get up to the second line, always waiting for me. Almost, you know, he's so quick. It's almost like he's sitting there waiting. Man, we're like, come on. Come here, Ted. Come
so
on.
So he kicked your ass?
No, he didn't kick my ass.
Oh. You just bat. You scrapped.
He'd kick our nose tackle's asses on his way to try to get to me. But Tom Nalen, phenomenal center that you probably, most people have never even heard of. Number two on my most underrated list, he finally got into the Hall of Fame. I loved his game. He was undersized. He was looked nothing like what typical middle linebackers look like, but he played like he was, you know, 270 pounds. And that is Zach Thomas. Zach Thomas, one of the more underrated linebackers to ever play the game. He finally got his due and got into the Hall of Fame. And the number one most underrated player of my generation, former teammate of mine. Take a listen.
On first and 10, it is Martin again inside the 15, inside the 10, to the 5, and in the end zone. Touchdown, Curtis Martin.
Curtis Martin, one of the more underrated, I think, and even though he got into the Hall of Fame.
He's a Hall of Famer, yeah.
He was the guy, so whenever you're covering him, and he catches the ball, and he does his little juke, and you're like, you're right there. All of a sudden, he's gone. His ability to get away from you after his cuts was unmatched. I thought Curtis Martin's ability in the open field was breathtaking. So he's the fifth guy on my five most underrated. So who do we got? We got J.J. Watt, Tom Nalen, Ben Coates, Zach Thomas, and Curtis Martin are the five most underrated players that I played with or against.
My favorite guy on there, I think, is Ben Coates, because I think he's a guy that people would be surprised if you didn't watch him and it played out different. He's closer to Gronk than people think. Like, people would never put him in the best tight end of all time conversation
that's
where Gronk
is. That's a dumb thing for people to say.
He's closer to Gronk than people really think.
He has gotten, I would say, in the age of Instagram and different NFL reels of people cutting up highlights of players that people younger than us didn't get a chance to watch live, he has gotten a lot of run.
And he should. And, you know, had he played differently and Drew hadn't maybe needed to lean on him so much, I think he could have held up a little longer at a higher level. Curtis Martin's an interesting one for me because I always thought Curtis did himself a disservice with the way he looked. He wore, like, weird pads, baggy jersey. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, Ted, didn't he wear, like, arm sleeves or big elbow pads?
There was a lot going on.
Yeah, there was a lot going on that made him look, you know, like he didn't
kind of
have
bulky.
Yeah. You know, like not as athletic as I think he was as Ted's talking about, embarrassing people on a football field.
You know, Ted, there was a player you obviously wouldn't have played against him. You wouldn't have played lined up against him, but you certainly could have played against him or had some run with him. What was your impression of John Randall?
John was...
I always thought he was one of the most ferocious football players.
You know, but that whole Vikings, you know, they had Henry Thomas was on that line. They had kind of they had their own nickname. I thought John was pretty damn good, man. You know, and I'm a big fan of guys with high motors. That was part of J.J. Watt to me was a physical freak with one of the highest motors I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
It was.
And then the injuries started to take their toll. And Fitzy's right. Yep. He also gets lumped in with the varsity jacket game and things of that nature. Like, blame it all on him. If he was good, then how come his team's
crapped out? On Hard Knocks, they opened an episode with him just catching 50 passes from the jugs machine single-handedly. Yeah. Like, okay, Captain America.
There was a time where it was like oversaturated J.J. Watt. It's too much. Yeah. Too much J.J. Watt. And he was almost putting himself out. And then you go, and then he's donating money to... Like, my whole co-host, we always laugh because I just used to think, the guy's just doing this for, you know, publicity. It's like, dude, the guy was always delivering.
Yeah.
Like, it's really who he's
genuine.
He's a genuine guy.
And even
he
now,
won me over.
Even now, if you follow him on social media, he still seems genuine. Like, I love following. He had one the other day where he went to a baseball game and he was trying to do the 9-inning challenge where you drink 9 beers, have 9 hot dogs over 9 innings or whatever. Like, he just seems like a good dude.
Did he win?
Well, he was like, I think he tweeted out, like, I'm already 6 dogs and beers in. This seems like it's going to be easy or something like that. I was like,
when you're built different, like when you took super soldier serum, it makes it easier.
It's funny how, like, Travis Kelce's mom has kind of become like a star just with her. JJ's mom became a star down in Houston with commercials they did together. I think the guy could do movies. I think he does a good job in the.
He's got personality
in the pregame stuff.
Yep,
I think he's
alongside. Really actually, he shares table space with somebody who was on the overrated list, Matt Ryan. who I think does a good job on TV as well.
I do like him on TV. I don't know if I think he's overrated, but Ted Johnson's list of overrated, I am excited to hear. Go ahead, Ted.
Okay, so we're going to start with one that might surprise you. Go ahead, Stiz. This is number one on my most overrated list.
Down by two scores. Play action, and he is hit at the 12 by Ted Johnson. The third sack, and the Patriots eating up the Miami offense.
Dan Marino.
Wow.
Woo-hoo. Maybe that's because.
Go ahead. Proceed.
So whenever we play the Miami Dolphins, we blitz the middle linebacker right up the A-gap. Why? Because Dan Marino couldn't move. At all because of his knees.
Yep.
I just thought there was a little bit of an overratedness to Dan Marino's game. A little bit.
Was did I hear third sack of the day? Is that what that said?
Not by me.
But if I
had to go look at all 11 and a half sacks of my career, I think most of them would be against Marino.
Really?
Yeah.
So we'll cross him off the list of potential future guests.
That's probably smart.
Arm talent to spare.
All right, number two on my most overrated list. I hate to say it, but I got my man, the bus, Jerome Bettis.
What?
One of the more, yeah. Give me.
I'm more in on that one than Marino.
I thought he was your measuring stick. Like you were proud to tackle him and used to light him up and stuff.
I did. It was fun. But I would rather play him than I would Edgerrin James. Than I would Marshall Faulk.
What was it about Edgerrin James that made him so? Was he just
smooth?
Yeah,
smooth, and you know he was a smaller. He didn't. It was hard to really get.
He moved
like
okay.
Arian Foster. If you ever like Arian, like when you go to hit him, they would kind of turn a little bit, so you never got like good shots on him.
Yep.
Jerome was this big target. He didn't lean forward. He was a big body, and so it was an easier target to hit.
Who was the? Which one of you brought him down on that fourth and one? On that first sequence, a series of downs in the AFC Championship,
yep,
that January 2005.
The ball was fumbled at the exchange, so he went down, but Vrabel's fell on top of him.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, okay,
they should have never gone for it on that. All right, number three on my most overrated list, it's probably pretty obvious, and we didn't overlap too much. Eli Manning, to me, over.
Yeah.
Please don't put him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, he lives on two games, basically. Two little runs there, and it's hard to take those away from him.
And I'll make these last two.
How do you make that?
Last two real quick, but there's a theme. Marvin Harrison, I thought, was a little bit overrated. Kind of a product of the system, if you will. And
don't tell him that.
Yeah.
The fifth guy on my most overrated list, I'm going to say it. Oh, it's going to hurt. Peyton Manning. A little overrated.
Wow.
Ted Johnson.
Overrated.
Both Manning brothers
are going to make NFL.com. Ted Johnson, Peyton Manning, a little overrated.
Just a smidge. You know, can I tell you why? Can I tell you why?
Sure.
You want to hear why?
Because he couldn't beat the Patriots.
Because we had some protection problems out there.
Personnel all the time. Same. They didn't have two tight end sets. They didn't have 21 personnel. They didn't have 20. They ran 11 every time. They never motioned. And they had a very simple concept of high-low that – you know what? It's just, to me, it was an easier system that they employed. And that, to me, it's like.
The Tom Moore offense?
Look, Peyton's a beast. I love Peyton. But I just thought he was a tad overrated when you consider truly the system that he played in was one of the more basic systems.
Wow.
Text line wanted to know how close Willie McGinnis was to making it to your five most underrated.
He's on there. Willie Mack. I love Willie Mack. Are you kidding me? Willie Mack was I put him in the super freak.
He's in physical dominant thing.
For a guy that size to be able to not only rush the passer, but we had him out there rerouting number two receivers, like in space.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he
could do everything.
I can't believe both Mannings are on the top five Ted Johnson most overrated players of all time.
But so is Dan freaking Marino. Dan Ball had a question.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Dan?
Ted kind of gave us an impromptu TED talk maybe a month or two ago when we got into the topic of the Colts. And I think you said, if I remember correctly, Ted, the more that Peyton Manning stayed in the pocket, the more that he sweat. Like he got worse the more that you made him sit
back. Wasn't there. That's right. We were supposed to be doing the all quarter century team. And then we got into that, and you said, because I'm so fascinated by that offense, and I think Peyton Manning's underrated, believe it or not. But
I was like, Peyton, I ain't falling for that.
I didn't play the game you did, Ted, but you said if you could control Edgerrin James, you controlled the Colts offense.
Correct.
And Ted Johnson controlled Edgerrin James.
You know,
I remember. remember that one. I remember that.
Yeah, but that's exactly right. So we would – I could not believe it. You go, well, how do you get – you never could get pressure on Caden. Peyton got the ball out so damn fast. So why blitz? Instead of blitz, we'd only rush three guys. So that means eight guys are in the, back in the pass coverage. Yep. So Peyton didn't know where to go with the football, so he's holding it, holding. He's not a guy that can, you know, ad lib.
Right.
And so the longer he held the ball, the more prone he was to make a mistake.
Ted, can you answer a quick question for Bobby in West Palm Beach about one of your predecessors at linebacker in New England? What's up, Bobby?
Yeah, I have two questions now, two points. One, I wanted your opinion of Steve Nelson. And can you hear me?
Yeah, yes. I got you, Bob.
And one other thing, this is way before you, Ted. By the way, Ted, I loved your game. I mean, you were just growing up, you were just unbelievable. But another player that I think was really underrated, if you look at statistically what he did, was Stanley Morgan. This is way before you, but look at Stanley Morgan, I think, historically was a very underrated football player. He averaged, over 20 yards a number of years of pass. That's all I wanted to say, and I wanted you to comment on that.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Bobby. I always feel bad about the Steve Nelson. I mean, I lived in San Diego when Steve was playing for the Patriots, and they were never on TV.
Yep.
I never saw Steve play.
Really?
The Patriots never played on national TV when I was living there, so I never got to see Steve
or
play.
Local TV.
I got drafted in 1995. Parcells calls me 5 minutes after I get drafted, and he starts telling me about all the linebackers on the team currently, and then he says, "And you remind me of Steve Nelson," and I didn't know
what a
who
compliment.
Steve and I clearly when I got drafted here and came here, I learned a lot more about Steve. And learned that that was a very nice compliment. But Steve, I never got to see him play to really. I heard he was a stud though. 13 years,
he was a stud. Interception,
similar like, stylistically.
Oh yeah, he could play. And Stanley Morgan, very much underrated. Just a different era. He was a down the field. Grogan would throw it up. They would put up ridiculous numbers. 21 yards a catch. Just totally different time.
He has been one of the names that's been bandied about Pats Nation the last couple of years, like, should he get a look for the Hall of Fame?
Yes. I know everybody wants to go bang the drum for Julian Edelman. In my mind, Julian Edelman's third on the list of wide receivers who should go in the Hall of Fame. Stanley Morgan and Wes Welker are ahead of him. It's just the reality for me. 617-779-7937. If you want to react to Ted Johnson's overrated and underrated players, or if you want to line up to react to what I'm going to call the Patriots, looks like they could be developing into the MAGA Patriots. I'll tell you what I mean by that next here on WEEI Afternoons. That was Drake May talking about his head coach, Mike Vrabel, getting a little bloodied, joining into a fracas yesterday at Gillette Stadium. If you're watching on Twitch right now, you
there
see
it is.
One of the memes that's been making the rounds with Mike Vrabel's face put on Donald Trump's body post-assassination attempt where he raised a fist to the crowd.
That thing has now gotten, that is the fight on meme. And that has gotten so many impressions over the past 24 hours, it's bananas.
And I was stunned, I'll be honest. Not that Mike Vrabel got involved, because he's Hardo Vrabel.
He still thinks he's a player.
I was stunned that Drake May said the word Trump in his press conference. I would have thought in this day and age, in this climate, if you're a young athlete and, you know, you're trying to make your way as a second-year quarterback, you're probably hoping to get sponsorships and deals. Like, a name you would just leave out, pro or con, would be Trump. Like, just don't say it. Nothing good can come from, like, I'm going to piss off somebody if I say this name. And he went there yesterday. And it made me
Democrats
laugh.
Buy shoes, too, man.
Exactly. You know? Like, Jordan built a career. I'm like, I'm not going to alienate anybody because they all got $100 to buy my sneakers. Mm-hmm. And for him to say that and then this meme to take off, and obviously there's a history with, you know, Robert Kraft and Tom Brady and the MAGA hat and all these things here in New England.
You don't say. Never heard much about it.
And Stiz now hates the Patriots, apparently. It's weird. Is that any retort, Stiz?
No, I'm off the bandwagon. That's it. This is the final straw.
Oh, whoa. How many games did they fall down your prediction list?
Five.
Wow. You know what I liked about all of it, though?
Season's over.
The word we used earlier for Ben Coates. There was a little genuine to yesterday. Just like they're genuinely just doing what they think is right, saying. Like, I used the phrase years ago with Mac Jones. I always thought he was scared douchey. He was so scared to not say anything that it made him come off as a douche, a total douche on the radio in his interviews, everything.
Ever.
Am I allowed to say?
I do. Probably. I say it all the time.
Okay.
Good. I don't know if
I think the third one was fine.
Okay. Yeah. Beg for permission, don't ask for forgiveness kind of thing. Yeah. So, whatever. But there was
just a dink.
The coach did
definitely
what,
a dink.
The coach did what he was comfortable doing.
Yep.
The quarterback was comfortable just kind of matter-of-factly talking about it with the media because I'm the leader of the team. Why would I be afraid to say that kind? Like, yesterday felt like a day. We talked about measuring up. Forget that. I thought they competed and measured up. It feels like they're comfortable in their own football skin down there in Foxborough. And I don't know if Gerard Mayo and his team was ever comfortable in its skin last year.
I don't think so,
Ron.
Probably not. Yeah.
Were they comfortable in it all last year?
Nothing. Yes, comfortable in leaving the building, knowing that their job was done.
They beat the Bengals week one, and I was like, really? How did this team beat the Bengals?
I still don't think they beat the Bengals. I think the Bengals beat the Bengals in week one.
Zach Taylor and Mike Gesicki, they contributed more to that defeat. But if you think about like what Vrabel was trying to do, as Giardi called him, the offseason MVP,
yeah,
hasn't he made them believe in themselves and like it's okay to be you, do you, that's cool. That would then inspire the comforting confidence that these guys seem to have right now, Ted. Like
it's all good right now. Let's see when the games come. You gotta win. To really get guys to buy in, you gotta win. So they're right now they're buying everything he's selling. And now it comes down to whether or not, you know, what does it look like in games, and can it equate to wins? Then the good time will keep rolling.
And this made me think back to the Vrabel interview with his former Titans players, bussing with the boys, and he made a comment about sort of building culture and the way it had to be here in New England that I think is poignant right now.
We can have different personalities. We can't have different mentalities. I've realized that if the mentality is the same, how they maybe act off the field or what their personality is, or they may not be, you know, I would say that we all kind of have this similar personality, right? But there's a lot of people and players that are successful that don't, and I have to be okay with that if ultimately their mentality is about the culture that we want to have here.
That's it. That's a good way to put it.
I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's solid. Got different backgrounds, different types of personalities, but when you come to work, you have that same exact vision and mentality. Mm-hmm. And that's that. I mean, I told you when Vrabel got inducted a couple years ago in the Patriots Hall of Fame, I was lucky enough to be able to speak on his behalf on that day. And I was talking to him at the party after, and I just remember him saying, I'm trying to get what we had in Tennessee, what we had in with the Patriots in those last couple years. And it was magical, man. And it was a lot of different big alpha personalities that when we came to work, we're all pulling in the same direction. That is really hard to do, man.
What is the balance, you think, Ted, in Mike Vrabel's leadership, since you know him pretty well, between intimidation and inspiration?
I think it's more inspirational, you know. I don't think he's not a bully, but he can be forceful.
Mm-hmm.
He can be I don't think demeaning. I think he can be strong, and I think he can make his point, and I think he can get mad, but I don't think he has a piece in him. There's coaches that can be just demeaning, where they can address a player and the player feels like he's lower than well done. I mean, really, you know, that's not my style.
Well, and that's where when he was first hired, I compared him to a guy who's never been a head coach. But I observed Dante Scarnecchia for a long time, who was tough to play for, who could be a dictator, who could be at times from afar look like he was almost being demeaning to players.
Right.
Who then would run through a wall for him. So they didn't see it as demeaning. However, he pulled it off, and I think he was a Parcellian master, button pusher, motivator, whatever you want to call it.
Do you know what makes those types of coaches really good? It's when you don't see them coaching.
Right.
It's you see them out there on the practice field, they have one persona, but they can, if they're hard on players at practice, but they're good coaches that players respect and will run walls through, it's because of the stuff behind the scenes that you don't see what they're saying to the players.
And I think Vrabel has that can be an a-hole to a guy on the field, but because of the other 8 hours of the day and their interactions, their relationships, he checked in on your family. He knows your kid's name. Right. He has some sort of a connection that gives him the ability to do that and knows he's not losing the player on the field when he calls him out, does whatever he does. So 617-779-7937, leading into the drive here on WEEI Afternoons, where we do need to get back to the Boston Red Sox, Roman Anthony. Everything's right in the world when you have the Roman Empire, except for last night's game. We'll get to that next on the drive here on WEEI Afternoons.